Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, James Edwards and I, we like to periodically get together on the show and break down the NBA. The thing is, though, that what we decided to do over the last couple of days is the boring stuff. It's not the exciting stuff. We dredged through NBA media days, which, as James will tell you, I'm going to ask him here momentarily, can be just the most banal, boring days that you have. And we got the most important storylines for you that you need to know heading into this NBA season that came out of NBA media days. James was at his own media day as the Athletic's beat writer for the Detroit Pistons. James, first and foremost, how are you doing before we get into how media day was?
I'm doing good, man. I'm tired, but it's not from just laying around all day. I'm glad to be back in the swing of things, to have a reason to wake up and take a shower instead of letting that linger till 3 p.m. It's good to get my hygiene back on track. It's also just good to be kind of just have something to do every day. The summer months are fun and you enjoy them, but when September hits, you start to get that itch to like, all right, I need something to do today. So I'm in a good space. It's been a fun last week.
So you were at the Detroit Pistons media day.
Yes.
What can you explain for people what the vibe is at these media days before we dive into the things we wanted to talk about?
It's essentially speed dating. I think that's a great way to describe it, because not only it's media. And I think when people think media day, they think like the reporters who cover the team, like this day is all about them. It's not the case. Yeah. The teams get their own media. So like when you see the Pistons intro on the Jumbotron before the game, that shot at media day, all these gimmicks where they're doing name this movie or name this island or name 10 countries in Africa, like that stuff's done on media day. So the players are getting dragged in all different types of directions. And then when one guy has a free moment, he steps into the press room, and that's when we have our crack at him. So a lot of cliches. a lot of how much weight did you lose? How much weight did you gain? The best shape of my life, the worst shape of my life. It is what it is for a writer. It's not necessarily the best place to get content. But it is good to see everybody and kind of get back in that mode too.
So we have a whole section listed here for Muscle Watch, because we got one of the all-time great Muscle Watch quotes in history on Monday in the United States. So let's dive in, though. We're going to set a five-minute timer on each of these things, and we're going to talk about them. And we're going to kind of dive into what they mean in terms of league-wide implications. So first, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander finally addressed the constant rumors that seem to be pervading the internet about his status as a member of the Oklahoma City Thunder. I found this entire thing to be completely ridiculous. I don't really understand. It feels like it just came naturally out of like some New York Knicks fever dream to try and get Shai Gilgeous-Alexander out of Oklahoma City. Yeah, Sam Presti on Sunday said the only reason we're talking about it is because another player on another team got traded. The machine, the aggregation machine, is empty now, so we need a little more content. That's the price of admission. It's not a penalty. No one's out to try and disrupt the Thunder or create problems for the Thunder. It's a business we work in. You shouldn't be surprised by that, because there needs to be content. We need attention. Attention drives advertisements. Advertisements drive salaries. That's how it works. We have to be able to perform irrespective of that. So I think I'm level setting that to say that if Donovan Mitchell was not traded already, you wouldn't ask me that question. So therefore, I don't think they're related. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander tells our Andrew Schlecht, dear sweet friend of the program, Andrew Schlecht, I know what I signed up for when I signed a 5-year extension, and I don't think we're going to be losing for much longer. I believe in this team. So Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I have not understood these trade rumors from the jump. Have you?
No, I have not. And I also, as a media member, you ask that when you're trying to manifest, you're trying to connect dots, and it's not like a natural storyline. Like, I just don't get I don't understand what you think their answer is going to be. Like, I feel like it's just a wasted, like, I'd be pissed if I was sitting in that media room ready to go home after 3 hours and you're asking about him getting traded. Yeah.
And also I'll say this, like, the way that Andrew did it, I think makes sense. Like, you have
him sat down. He did a great job. Yeah.
Yeah. You have him sat down for a one-on-one and he is on camera. He gets a chance to address it and that's it. Right. Yeah. You do it like in a media session, it's just going to create chaos.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
But I like the way Andrew did it. I think it was smart, but I don't really get where the Shai rumors have come from. It feels like there are other front offices maybe that are trying to like leak into the media to try and pull Shai Gilgeous-Alexander out of Oklahoma City, as opposed to, like, why in the world would Oklahoma City even want to consider moving Shai? Like, even by some ridiculous standard, like, I don't believe this has happened, but even if he would go in to Oklahoma City and say, hey, Sam, I really don't want to be here anymore. I would like a trade. Sam Presti is just going to say no,
right? Yes.
You're locked in. You're the part of our rebuild along with Chet Holmgren and Josh Giddey. We're not moving you. Like, that's what it would come down to, right?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think where it comes from, I don't think that narrative would have been stirred up if Chet didn't get hurt. I think there's the idea out there that the Thunder, and they were going to probably be really bad again if Chet played, but I think there's the idea now that they're like, okay, they're going to tank again, like tank a season again, and it's like, well, you have this good young player, maybe your timeline's pushed back a year because Chet got hurt. Like, does it make more sense to trade him? Like, I think those are the dots that people are connecting. If it's not what you said, kind of starting to be planted by opposing front offices, I think those dots are what people are trying to connect. And it's like, no, like, Shai's still young. He's still very young. He's still under contract. He doesn't seem disgruntled. He signed that deal in the middle of them being absolutely terrible. He knew what he was getting into. Like, it's not like he was Kevin Love when Kevin Love signed his deal and he thought it could go one of two ways. Like, Shai knew what it was.
Yeah, and Shai is in the first year of this deal. Like, it's not like he is, you know, in year three and time is running low for the Thunder and, you know, they need to make strides now. He's in the first year. This is the first year of this extension. Yep. It is insane to think that the Thunder would move him at any point in the next year. Maybe like if things broke totally wrong, they won 10 games this year and like it turned into a total nightmare and he really got disgruntled, which, by the way, like, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, not a guy to like, you know, go to the media and absolutely trash things, right? Yeah. Like, he's pretty quiet by nature.
Yeah.
I just don't, I don't even see that. Like, it seems like a very silly conversation to me. It just does.
I'm with you. I don't think it happens if Chet doesn't get hurt.
Number two, Zion Williamson. I think the note that I sent you in our little preview is, Jesus Christ, Zion Williamson is jacked again.
Yeah.
Holy shit, Zion Williamson. Like, if we're going to do like a muscle watch section, and we're going to save that to the end, but like, I think Zion deserved his own section.
Yes.
Because he is in the best shape we've seen him in his NBA career. And look, let's be real about it. That's not saying a lot. Zion has dealt with injury. He dealt with injuries his first year and I think came back and didn't really have conditioning. His second year, he was in pretty good shape, but I think that like you could see it defensively, right? Where his kind of motor didn't run all the way hot all the time in comparison to what it did at Duke. Mm-hmm. Last year, obviously, was out for the whole year. There were many images of him looking like he was something like 300 pounds. He looks phenomenal this year. And this is something Will Guillory at our website has written about. You should go read his story about how he's gone about doing it. But Zion looks awesome. And I've had some questions about this New Orleans team and just the lineups they're going to use. Not about the talent. I think they're extremely talented. But seeing Zion come in like this just makes me think, oh, this has a chance to be like a monster team.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah, I hope for Zion's sake that, assuming he hasn't been in New Orleans a lot the last few months, I hope now that he's back in New Orleans permanently, that doesn't impact what he's built, because kudos to him. It looks like he really worked his tail off. But as you know, Sam, that New Orleans food will get you. There's a lot of it, and it's not very good for you. So I'm actually very curious, because I think that is kind of like a base point, because this is legitimately, with our own eyes, the best we've seen him look. And if he goes through a season and we start to see him maybe gain a little weight, like maybe that is a conversation that needs to be had. But he looks phenomenal. I agree with you. There are questions about the lineups on this Pelicans team, but this is like, they're going to be my league pass team of the season. Like when I'm not at a game and the Pels are playing, I'm going to be watching the Pelicans. Like I think they're going to be so much fun.
Yeah. And you know what? Like there's the big thing about coming into the season in shape for players is that the season goes so quick. It just is so fast paced, and you have games every night and you're just like losing calories. Guys tend to lose weight throughout the season as opposed to gain weight, because it's just hard to keep it on. It's hard to keep that kind of muscle mass on. Now, as long as Zion is on like a, you know, strong diet and like has everything going, I think there's reason to believe that like he could get even in better shape throughout the course of the season, not worse shape because of this. So it's enormously important that Zion's coming into play and coming into the season as healthy as he is and as in shape as he is. I couldn't be more excited for this Pelicans team. Like, I think that I was kind of like, 46.5 on their win total over under when Robbie Calland and I did their over under. Seeing Zion makes me think they have a chance to like go way over if this all goes right. I think they're, like I said, you know, they have a lot of defensive questions because their big three players, or really their four best players, are Zion, CJ McCollum, Brandon Ingram, Jonas Valanciunas. All four of those guys have their own defensive concerns in some way. But if the offense is as good as it has a chance to be, it might not matter. And they're long, they're big, they're athletic. They have Herb Jones and Trey Murphy. Like, they might just be able to shrink the court on teams defensively while being more athletic and being able to do everything they want offensively.
They're going to remind me a little bit defensively, not to the same extent because that team went really big, but in terms of length, the championship Lakers team of 2020. Like just when you saw that team in person, how long they were and how big they were. Like, again, they're not going to have the exact same size in the front court, but I mean, you just named a bunch of guys that just have abnormal wingspans. And I think they're going to shrink the court. I think that alone might make them a little bit better defensively than the individuals that they have. I can't wait. I want to say like, I want to give like a shocking hot take prediction for the Pelicans, but I can't think of one that's not a little too hot to touch, but I'm going to think of one because I love this team. I love this team.
Okay. Let's go to a bit more of a depressing media day. Mark Spears noted that the Phoenix Suns had what he called, and I quote, the most depressing media day in history. DeAndre Ayton does not look real enthusiastic to be there. He is on video saying that he and Monty Williams have not talked. since Game 7 against the Mavericks when they got into a verbal discussion on the sidelines, let's go with. James Jones obviously was asked about the Robert Sarver investigation and suspension. He was quoted as saying he was in a state of shock. Just personally, you don't want to see those types of findings. You don't want that to be the narrative around your organization. You don't want that to be an issue. Just a wild like situation with Phoenix, because this team won like 10 more games than anybody else last year in the NBA. And it feels horrible. You have to feel really horrible if you're a Suns fan right now, given the cloud over that organization.
Maybe this is on me, and I wasn't paying attention as closely as I needed to this offseason, but I was kind of taken aback by the DeAndre Ayton session. You would assume, while even though going through the whole free agency process with him and is he getting traded, like it wasn't handled well. It was very clear that there was a situation there, but I would have guessed that at least got to a cordial point. They don't have to be best friends, but I would have assumed it was at least cordial. Obviously we have no idea. I mean, it sounds like they don't even look at each other when they walk past each other.
How would they have not talked? That's my question.
I wonder. I thought I saw a tweet. I thought I saw what you said, but then I thought I saw another one that says they didn't talk about Game 7.
Maybe, yeah. But like, how do you not address that?
Exactly. Thing. Like, especially when you're bringing him back in the building, he was doing the team promos for the new jerseys. Like, it felt like everything was starting to be good. Man, it just goes to show you in this league how quick a title window can close. Not saying that they're still not titles contenders, not saying that they can't figure it out, that whatever, yeah. But I mean, that was the one team that got everybody to like Chris Paul. People were rooting for Chris Paul because that Suns team, just they were just so professional the way that they played, the leap that they took when they added him. Like, it was hard to find somebody that didn't enjoy that Suns team and wasn't rooting for that Suns team.
Yeah.
But now it's like, do the players get along? Does Chris Paul have another year left in him? How is this affecting Devin Booker, who's just been kind of quiet and as he is just doing his own thing, but I'm sure it's impacting him in some way or form. So,
yeah.
Very weird.
In the Robert Sarver, like, we haven't talked about Robert Sarver, but
yeah,
like,
I mean, yeah,
you know, Robert Sarver, you know, this investigation found that he is credibly accused of making racist and misogynist comments and, you know, running the organization, unfortunately, in a manner unbecoming of an owner, in my opinion, at least.
Yep.
And he's selling the team. And, you know, even in terms of just the impact that would have on an organization full of black men and an organization that has women that work there. And on the same side, like on the NBA side, like Cam Johnson is in the middle of like potentially an extension talk right now. And yep. How does that impact his play on the court? Can they even give him an extension right now, given the ownership situation being in flux with Sarver selling the team? Like, these are all important things, like, that I don't know how to answer.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I just think there's too much sideshow distraction, and internal distraction. You're curious to see how even their fans react. Like, that was a place my first couple of years on the beat. I mean, you could get a seat in the bleachers and move down to the first row, and then they get good, and that place is absolutely packing. And it's like, now, like, do people take a stand on the ownership? And it's going to be very complicated. I think even more nuanced than we can imagine for those that are actually involved. And yeah, man, the DeAndre stuff was weird. You'd imagine that it would at least be cordial, and it doesn't even sound like it's cordial right now.
Let's go to the Los Angeles Lakers now. The Los Angeles Lakers, LeBron wants the team to improve defensively. Russ says that it doesn't matter if people want him here. I think that Darvin Ham said that Russ is not a definitive starter on this team. Mm-hmm. And then Rob Pelinka says the team is willing to move its first round picks in order to make a leap up the standings. So that's a lot. There's a lot there with the Lakers. a lot of things going on. Of those four things that I just mentioned, what do you think is the most important thing that came out of Lakers Media Day?
I think the most, can I switch that question to interesting?
Yeah.
Because, listen, if Pelinka, so what are they willing to move those first four? Because
I mean, it seems like they're not willing to move two firsts for Miles Turner and Buddy Hield is the impression I've gotten.
As somebody who now covers Bojan Bogdanović, I would imagine, and I haven't looked at their books and how hard it would be to match the salary or whatever, but I'm just, so if I'm way off base here, and I'm wasting time, I apologize, but them giving up one pick for Bojan seems like something that would make sense. And I know that Utah didn't have a first round pick offer. So what is
it? Wait, you think Utah did not?
I was told that they did not have one that was enticing. Like it sounded like, I'm sorry. To me, it sounded like the Lakers didn't even offer one. Maybe I don't know that, but that's just how it was.
Well, it would make sense that that's the case because the report from Andy Larson with the Salt Lake Tribune was that they had first round picks on the table, but it would require taking salary into the future.
Right.
The way that the Lakers would match a Bojan, plus Clarkson or Bojan plus Conley, whatever they would want to do. The way they would match that is by Russ's deal, which is not extended out into the future. It's expiring this year. So exactly. It would make sense that the Lakers did not offer a first round pick for Bojan.
Right. So I just I just feel like there's something there that could be done. Again, maybe not. It seems like the Lakers, for given where they are a little hesitant to move those, and I get making sure you have one foot in the future, but it's like the window's now, and I don't know where you're at, Sam, with this team. I don't think this team is very good still. But the Russ thing's interesting. I mean, it's been talked about all summer. I like that Darvin said it out loud. That takes a lot of cojones to do.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that the important thing that came out of it is that they're sticking to their guns, that Russ is not a guaranteed starter on this team. Look, I think that what Pelinka said is pretty obvious. Like if they get an offer where they're willing to move a first round pick, I think they'll do it. But I think that them sticking to the idea that they might not actually start Russ is critical because he doesn't really fit with this starting unit. I think you can make a case that they might be better off, just given that you'd put the ball in LeBron and Anthony Davis's hands more. You could be better off starting someone like Austin Reeves if Austin Reeves is going to shoot 37% from three, or Kendrick Nunn if Kendrick Nunn is going to shoot 39% from three. And if Russ is willing to come in and defend at a really high level and move the ball and be the transition driver that we know he can be, then yeah, sure, absolutely, he should start. I still think Russ can be a very valuable player. You don't just go from being a 10-time all NBA player to being a zero value entity. Without injury. Right. Yeah. So I think if he's willing to come in and do the right things under Darvin Ham, then great. But making him earn it, I think, is the right idea.
I agree. And I would, if I were Darvin, I would stagger it, the lineup, to the point that I don't even want to see Russ and LeBron on the floor together. I would have Russ run the second unit, play him with AD, spam pick and roll, and let Russ be Russ. Find a way to allow Russ to be Russ, because as much as I want him to conform and maybe change his game, I think then you're walking the territory of this isn't Russell Westbrook anymore, and you're losing what he's best at. And what makes him who he is. But I think it's important for them to carve out some minutes for Russ to be Russ.
This episode is brought to you by PwC. When unprecedented times are all the time, it's time to start walking the talk. Leaders like you turn to PwC to see and stay ahead. Upskill your workforce, use intelligent automation, and transform big ideas into breakthrough reinvention. Explore the human-led, tech-powered solutions that help you reinvent. It's all part of the new equation. Learn more at pwc.com.
Okay, let's go to the next topic here, which is the Brooklyn Nets. I have a lot of quotes here, starting with a beautiful one from Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving on the Nets summer. It was a clusterfuck. Thanks, Kyrie. Good call. Accurate.
Very.
Very accurate. Sean Marks and Steve Nash did not look particularly comfortable answering questions about Kevin Durant. Sean Marks was quoted as saying, first and foremost, I'm not his boss. We're partners here, parroting the language that has previously been stated. And if he wanted out and still wanted out, he wouldn't be here. He said it's pretty difficult to get like for like with a Kevin Durant trade. Said when Kevin Durant took his trade request back, plenty of GMs called Marks and essentially said we wouldn't have dealt him either. Kevin Durant said on not being traded, I'm not disappointed. Then went on to say, I think it's a year of growth, a year of us looking in the mirror like we fucked up as a team, you know, and that only makes you better. So I'm banking on that. I've got faith in that. We've got guys in this locker room. We've got people in this organization that want to see this organization be one of the most prominent in sports. So I'm banking on that. Durant also was asked about Kyrie Irving's contract situation and if that played a factor in his desire to leave. KD said, a lot of people have in their minds that I control everything here with the Nets. I only control my job as a player. I'm not a liaison between Kyrie and the Nets. Honestly, no. I think fair. Like, I didn't really have a problem with anything KD said.
I have a question for you because maybe I'm not thinking outside the box enough. With this whole Nets saga, I've never understood one thing.
Mm-hmm.
What did Brooklyn do? I'm pro player 99.9% of the time, but I honestly don't understand what the Nets did wrong in this situation. They've catered to those two and Harden to the epic degree. Mm-hmm. They let them pick their coach. The player chose not to get vaccinated and stay away. The other player asked for a trade. Like, I'm never pro team. But I do not understand why Brooklyn needed to look in the mirror. Am I missing something?
You know, I don't know that it was anything Brooklyn did necessarily. I think that, and look, the last thing I want to do is put words in Kevin Durant's mouth because that's how you get retweeted by Kevin Durant and get the craziness in your mentions, right?
Yeah.
But it could have just been simply that, you know, that there were questions about how good the team was going to be and, you know, I think Kevin wants to win another title, right? Like, for any explanation that the thing that I try to think about with Kevin Durant when he does anything, I try to limit it to basketball straight up because I think that's what matters to Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. I think Kevin purely is focused on basketball matters, pure and simple. And I just wonder if he thought, hey, look, we have 1 year left with Kyrie. Like, that could be a problem, and Kyrie can opt out at the end of the day. Maybe he just didn't want to be stuck in a bad spot where, you know, he's in his mid-30s now, and he didn't want to be in a year where he wouldn't be competing, maybe.
I think I hear what you're saying, but to me, my brain automatically goes back to, well, if this was about basketball and competing, I have a hard time believing Sean Marks wanted to move Jared Allen and start DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where it comes back to for me. It's like, were you serious about winning? Because this guy just made an all-star team, this young 20-something year old who doesn't need the ball and can still move. But what your words are telling me is that Sean Marks wanted DeAndre Jordan over Jared Allen. That's what he said by saying all he does is his job. So I hope KD, I love KD. I think he's the greatest scorer I've ever seen. I think he gets a bad rap, but I still just struggle to find what the Nets did wrong.
I don't think the Nets did anything wrong. I think it's purely that I just wonder if Kevin didn't have faith, you know, in June in the organization and, you know, maybe things have changed. Maybe he's seen Ben Simmons and sees Ben healthy and likes what Ben can bring. And maybe he sees, you know, obviously he knows what Kyrie can do. And he has seen that Joe Harris is healthy again. And, you know, I don't think they've seen TJ Warren on the court yet, but maybe he, you know, but they probably have seen Royce O'Neal, which will help their perimeter defense, which was a dumpster fire last year. So mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It's tricky. I don't think the Nets did anything wrong, but I will be interested to see how long of a leash all of this gets if things don't start well. I think the Nets have a chance to be really good. I just wonder how long of a leash everyone gets. Let's go to something that actually was not on our list, but I'm going to ask you about it anyway because it's important now. Lonzo Ball apparently can't run or jump yet.
Or walk up the stairs.
Yeah. And he is having, I believe, arthroscopic surgery on his knee. And it seems like he's going to miss like a pretty substantial portion of the season. I don't know if it's going to be like a month and a half, 2 months longer. It seems a bit unclear right now. This is like, this is a really important injury in the hierarchy of the Eastern Conference because it means that the Bulls really need Alex Caruso to stay like 100% healthy. Yeah. When that team lost Caruso and Lonzo last year, it was really hard for them to defend. And it was really hard for their offense to run as smoothly because of how good Caruso and Lonzo are as ball movers. Yeah. What is your reaction to the fact that Lonzo Ball, it seems like, is going to miss a pretty substantial portion of the season, it feels like?
Well, first and foremost, as a basketball fan, it sucks because I love Lonzo's story. I love that he kind of faded out of this reality TV, social media era spotlight and just settled into becoming like a really freaking good basketball player.
And for what it's worth, like, I don't know if you've talked to Lonzo before. I remember I talked to him at UCLA and that's never been him.
Yeah.
Like he's always been very low key. He's always been all about the team. Like the reality TV stuff, like that's just never been who he is as a person. I kind of just want to make that clear to people. Like,
yeah,
it does not surprise me. I don't think it surprises a lot of people in the league that like, this is what he settled into, even if like superstardom didn't come.
Right.
You know what I mean?
For sure. And I've always thought, I want to put this on there. I've always thought like the family was like really cool. I always thought those kids seemed like polite. Like it just was what it was. But
and
like
I've even talked to LeVar before, and LeVar is like, for all the like
I like him
and everything,
yeah,
he's not like as bad as what people think.
I believe it, but I just genuinely like the player that Lonzo's become. So that stinks first and foremost. But secondly, like you said, you hit the nail on the head. This is a team that, even on paper, right now has even without having much success had kind of a small window or small room for error, given they have DeRozan on that deal and he's getting up there in age. Pat Williams, they're still trying to figure out what he is. That could be I think he's going to be the X factor this season for them. Is he ready to take on a big role? But Lonzo was settling things to have LaVine coming off one of his better years. But he's always hurt. So it's like, there's just so much possibility with the range of where the Bulls can go, but to take out your 1B, 1A defender, your ball mover, which that team desperately needs on the offensive end with the other two perimeter players around him, it stinks and it puts the Bulls in question. And I already didn't love their bench much last year after the injuries. And I can't think of anything they've done to juice it up this offseason. I can't really think of anything the Bulls have done.
Yeah, I mean, so they brought in Andre Drummond. Right. Who else have they brought in? I feel like not like a crazy amount. Like, I think that honestly, they were probably hoping that, you know, guys like, you know, Kobe White would take a step forward. Right. And then, you know, obviously you get Pat Williams back. Maybe you start Pat Williams and you can kind of just, you know, shift guys down in terms of role a little bit. But I mean, I think the guy that like kind of is going to have to step up here is A, Kobe White, but B, like they might need Dalen Terry like early.
Yeah.
And I really like Dalen Terry long term. I did not think he was like ready to jump into an NBA role from day one necessarily. Mm-hmm. But he is the kind of like unselfish, you know, havoc creator in some ways and defender that they could kind of use without Lonzo being around. They obviously bring in Goran Dragic and he'll help stem the tide a little bit. And, you know, they have Io and maybe Io takes a bit of a leap moving forward, but I don't know, man. Like I'm a little bit worried about the Bulls is what I would say.
I am too. And aside from their own internal issues, externally, the East is pretty damn good, and it happened almost overnight. So, it stinks. But I think I wonder if the Bulls will be more willing to trade Mr. Pat Williams at some point this season if things don't necessarily go as planned for the roster and the team.
I'll be interested to see if that happens. I'll be interested to see Levine. The one that I think would go first is Vucevic. Would be the one that they try and move first and see if that could be like the spark plug kind of move. Yeah. But we'll see. Yeah, I don't think it'd be Levine. I think it'd be Vooch early. The Celtics apparently found out about Ime Udoka's suspension / everything that was going on Twitter, if you believe them, in their media session. Jaylen Brown said, "No conversations as far as me on my end with Ime. Initial reactions, we were all shocked what was going on, a little confused, but a lot of information wasn't being shared with us as or members of the team, so you can't really comment on it." It seems like this Ime Udoka situation obviously is not going away. It is one of the wilder stories we've seen across the NBA in quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And I really wonder, like, that did not seem like a great situation, a great vibe in Boston from the coverage of media days. And, you know, now you have Joe Mazzulla stepping in, who is a 34-year-old first-time coach. I have no idea how that's going to go. I have no idea.
Yeah. Coming off a championship level run where they lose in the finals. And I kind of, the first thing I thought after Boston lost was like, I think this is going to be big for Jason Tatum and his game, and seeing videos of him working on his floater and stuff. Like I've started to get excited for Tatum's season, but it's like, I don't even know. Like, obviously the situation itself is nuanced and kind of hard.
I don't think we know all the details yet.
Yeah,
all the details aren't out there. I don't think we know all the details.
All the details aren't out there, so it is what it is. But I'm curious. It's hard for me to grasp because it felt like Ime had a masterful presence on that team, even just being a first year coach. But I wonder if, like, for the guys not having been around Ime that long, I could see it maybe like not impacting that. Like, I don't know. It's weird. I kind of like want to see it play out. As much as success they had with him, he is still like fairly new to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it could be that. It could be that they trust Joe Mazzulla. It could be they don't trust Joe Mazzulla. I don't know. Yeah. The thing is that the Celtics felt like, look, they had the highest win total over under, according to Vegas, coming into the year. They felt like one of the sure things this season, right? We felt very good that the Celtics were going to keep getting better. They made the finals last year. Maybe they don't make the finals again, but maybe they win more regular season games. They take a step forward. They felt like one of the sure things this year league-wide.
Mm-hmm.
The Ime Udoka suspension, which is, I mean, based off of the reporting so far, I think could be light. Like, I don't think he's ever going to coach again, but like, I think that, for the Celtics at the very least, but like, I don't think he should coach again, if everything that has come out is right. He's sending unwanted messages and, you know, had a relationship within the workplace. Like, there's a reason that organizations frown on these things, and it's because of the power dynamics involved. And in the case of Ime Udoka, it's not it's not something that should be accepted, but it's complicated. Like, it's complicated in terms of how it's going to impact the team. And I think that it seems like a Celtics organization that is searching for answers in a substantial way, in a way that we didn't expect coming into the year, I guess is what I would say.
I think that's a great point. I think there were very few select teams who were coming into this year without any kind of like monkey wrench into their season. And that was one of the teams until that broke.
Yeah. Okay. Next up, let's go to this one. Draymond Green on a possible contract extension, before the season. This is the final year of his deal. He says, I don't think it's going to happen. He has a player option for next season, but he can enter free agency this summer. Jordan Poole, also a candidate for an extension. I'll let my reps handle that. I have faith and confidence we'll work something out. It sounded like he kind of wanted a deal, in my opinion, but he's not about to take less in order to do a deal. Fascinating situation in Golden State, just because of the money involved. Like, this is about to become the most expensive team in the league, like in history, if they re-sign all of the players that are coming up for free agency within the next year. And how they handle this is going to be very interesting. I don't know. Like, do they just let this ride for a year and then go, like, and try and figure it out again?
Yeah, man, it's complicated. I think if I'm Bob Meyer and Joe Lacob, I think they are a very unique case. Like, if I were anybody else running a team, I wouldn't do it this way. But for this group specifically, I would check in with Steph. Steph, do you want these guys to be here as long as you want to be here? And if you're the Warriors, and that means that in 2.5 years, you have the old folks home running out there and it's ugly basketball, so be it. This group of guys completely changed how your franchise is viewed. They are, you could make a case, they are the sports team, not just basketball team. They are the sports team of the 2010s. This is like the Warriors branding is not quite Chicago Bulls because of what Michael Jordan did, but it's going to be pretty damn close when this whole thing is done. Yeah. And I think there is value in that. And I think there is, I understand Bob and Joe's maybe hesitation in giving Draymond a 4-year max deal or 5-year max deal, because basketball wise, that doesn't make any sense. But sometimes when they've done something that very few people to ever walk this planet have done. And I think if that means a couple of rough years at the end to just kind of make everybody happy and to make sure this ends in the best way possible, so be it. But as you know, Sam, good things tend to not end well. And I'm looking forward to seeing Draymond in a like Minnesota Timberwolves jersey at like the age of 34 or something like that.
Well, here's the thing. So think about the way the Bulls dynasty ended. Mm-hmm. It ended with them deciding on a last dance and then trying to go down the road of like the Tyson Chandler, Eddie Curry rebuild. There's no guarantee that that's going to work. And I think that what Golden State is trying to create and foster is a situation where they don't have to do that, and that they're going to be able to transition smoothly with guys like Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, maybe James Wiseman. Although I will say, like, James Wiseman needs to really show some signs here, because that is a $10 million salary that gets mighty expensive for them in terms of, you know, luxury tax payments with all of these guys that they're going to have to sign. So like this is the year where Wiseman's got to do something to show.
I still have stock. So I'm hoping he does.
I hope he does too. Everything that you ever talk to anyone around basketball, they'll say James Wiseman is just like a terrific person, and that it's unfortunate that all of this has happened with him in terms of injuries. But I think that the critical thing is that if I was them, I'd just ride it out and try to build with these young guys that they think have upside and continue to try and hit in the draft. Cause there's no guarantees after that. Like, worst case scenario is you keep selling tickets for Stephen Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson. And
you'll make your money back. Yeah. You'll make your money back. I think I would rather have the conversation of telling Draymond he's got to come off the bench in 3 years than seeing him in 3 years wearing a different jersey and Klay's over here and Steph's probably going to be over there because those two are gone. Like, they've done enough for a lifetime.
Well, and with Dre too, you got to wonder, TV is calling Dre. It's coming, you know, like, let's be real about it. Like, it's coming. Yeah. And I wonder how long he'll hang around at the end of his career. Like, I don't know if he's going to be a hang around guy. Like, he might not just be, he might be someone that's like, I can walk into any TV job I want at the end of my career, point blank. Yeah. And he'll be able to, and he'll be able to do it for an absolutely obscene amount of money because he deserves it, because he's an awesome speaker about basketball, and he's opinionated and he's really, really sharp. But like, I don't know, man. Like, if I was him, I might not want to hang around. Like, he can be the most relevant person talking about basketball on TV when he retires. Yep. So I don't know. It doesn't surprise me. The Jordan Poole one's the bigger one for me. Like, I just don't know what they do with Jordan Poole. I would imagine they sign him, but like, if I was Jordan Poole, I'm not taking less than $28 million a year or whatever.
Right. No, I'm with you. I think that one's the Draymond one sucks. It's not necessarily tricky. It just sucks. Like, you're gonna have to make a decision right. Either way. The Jordan Poole one's tricky.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Okay. We're out of time on the Warriors. That was the first one. We got through eight without going over. I'm proud of us.
Good. As long as we didn't do it on OKC. Sorry, okay. Andrew.
Kawhi Watch is here. He's going to play this season.
He looks massive in like the greatest way possible. His thighs, enormous. Dude.
And his shoulders. Like, he just looks absolutely enormous.
Yeah, he's great.
I really don't know. This is Ty Lue. I really don't know. We got to be smart about the situation, about the process. The great news about Kawhi is he feels great. I love it. I'm so excited to see Kawhi Leonard play basketball again. Kawhi Leonard is awesome. And I'm going to use this just as a jumping point to talk about the Clippers. It feels like they're like kind of the sleeping giant this year that not enough people are talking about.
If he
and Paul George are healthy and at like 100%, this team is so deep. Like they like John Wall is like their seventh man. Robert Covington or Marcus Morris are like their eighth and ninth men. Luke Kennard is making $16 million. And like, he's probably a part of the rotation because he's a 40% 3-point shooter, but like,
it's no guarantees, right?
Like, Norman Powell exists. And their four guards are, you know, Reggie Jackson, John Wall, Norman Powell. And, you know, obviously you have Kennard, but who am I missing here? There's one more that's like just not on top of my brain for some reason.
Terrence Mann.
They have Terrence Mann, yeah. And like, it's just a loaded team.
It's the best roster in the league top to bottom, and I don't think it's particularly close.
I don't either.
Yeah.
So like, it feels like this team's loaded and they're ready to make the run. If it feels like that, if Kawhi is 100%.
If I get 70 games out of Kawhi, the Clippers are my team in the West.
I think I agree with you.
Like, they are so good. And Kawhi basically getting a year and a half off? Yeah. Was it two? Yeah.
It's about a year and a half, yeah.
I still think when he's healthy, like, he's the third best player in basketball. Paul George is, like, one of my favorite players of the last 10 years. So, like, I'm very biased, but I just think Paul's a phenomenal player. And I mean, everybody thinks Paul's phenomenal, but like, him and Kawhi together, doing that team, doing what it did last year without Kawhi, I think that really was big for like just the confidence of even like the few young players they did throw in there. And like you said, having that kind of almost like resurrection squad that they had with Reggie Jackson and Marcus Morris, and I'm probably missing somebody else, but it is
Nick Batum.
Like,
here's the thing. Like, Amir Coffey would be in the rotation for 80% of teams around the league, 85% of teams around the league.
Yeah.
He might be the Clippers' like 12th man.
Yeah.
Like, it's
and
crazy.
I think they like Jason Preston too. Like, and he will probably be in the G. Do they have a G League? What's the only team without a G?
Yeah. The Agua Caliente.
That's right.
Is the G League team.
That's right. Yeah. So, like, on paper, my pick to win it all this year, if healthy, is the Bucks. I think the Bucks get there this year. But I think the Clippers, if I can get 70 games out of Kawhi, I'll even give them 67. They're my pick.
All right. Muscle Watch 2022 is on. We had an all-timer from James Harden. Someone asked him about getting into better shape. He said he's lost 100 pounds. Tweet that. James Harden, just an absolute king. He looks like he's in great shape. Shout out James Harden.
He does look good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not 100 pounds.
Derrick Rose has lost 20 pounds. He looked very skinny
That shocked me.
Very, very skinny.
I didn't know that until I saw it in our conversation. I didn't know that. I haven't seen the photos. I got to check that out.
Yeah, Derrick Rose has been doing like a lot of, he's been like a big proponent of like yoga and Pilates and like core stabilization stuff.
From very holistic.
Gather, of course. Yeah.
I noticed that in Detroit. That's one thing I want to say. Derrick Rose is one of the my favorite players I've covered from a personality standpoint. I know stuff in his past with me covering him. I was very surprised how, for as quiet as he seems to be and just kind of this larger than life figure he once was, that is one of the most down to earth people I've covered.
It's interesting.
Who loves very the game. Yeah.
Yeah. But most importantly, to move on from Derrick Rose, Alexei Pokushevsky. Pokuism is back and thriving on the Game Theory podcast.
I love Poku.
He's up to 210.
Let's go, Poku. Here we come.
Poku's up to 210, baby. Yes, the league, it's getting taken by storm this year.
Poku's don't you worry. Something. He's going to be something one day. Cade's up to 226. Throw that one in there. Yeah.
So let's do that. Let's finish on that. Detroit Pistons Media Day, because I'm sure there are people watching for you and want to hear about the Pistons.
Okay.
Detroit Pistons Media Day. What are the most important things you learned?
Cade put on weight. I noticed it in his shoulders. The Pistons are ready. See, it's not, this is kind of the Pistons are ready to like compete every night. They didn't put a cap on what's acceptable in terms of postseason or not, but they want to be the team that you hate playing every night, which they did at the end of last year. So building off that, I think that they're going to go Stewart, Bojan, Bay, Ivy, and Cade to start the year. I think Dwayne's going to give Ivy every opportunity to start, and Burks is out until Burks is out for he's going to be reevaluated in 3 weeks. So that spot is really there for him to lose.
Yeah,
they're going to be fun. Yeah, it was very cliche, a lot of cliche stuff, but it was they're going to be a fun group for sure.
I saw you tweeting out Killian Hayes shot mechanics, videos. Kevin O'Connor's waiting, baby.
He is.
Waiting for Killian.
It's funny. Shout out to KOC. The only time KOC interacts with my tweets is if it's a Killian story. Like I post a Killian story, it's either a like or a retweet, because he knows it's kind of – I always notice that. It's funny. This could be the year.
KOC. Could be the year. Next James Harden. You gotta love KOC. Yeah. Funny. I have to do a quick mea culpa while we were talking about the Bojan trade. I was just like rolling through Pistons players. Like I was on a roll, right? Just running through them, talking about spacing, right? I was like, yeah they got like 40% 3-point shooters. And I ripped off Frank Jackson as like the last name. And I paused and I was like, Frank Jackson still play? And like, I think people could see it like on the video where I was like,
pondering
Frank
it.
Jackson still play?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Pistons fans, I notice I'm getting like fucking torn to shreds in the YouTube comments for saying Frank fans, Jackson, but relax. I'm with it. No.
No, relax.
I'm with it.
Listen, if you come to
I knew it as soon as I said it, put it that way.
There's that. And it's like, come on guys. Like Sam knows a lot of shit. Don't forgive him for not knowing the 12th man on the team that won 21 games. Left
it was just funny to be honest. Like I was like on a roll. I was like ripping off. I'm like, yeah, like I'm excited to see like Alec Burke. Like I'm excited to see like, you know, Cade play with like Alec Burks and Sadiq and Bojan and like maybe Isaiah Stewart shoots this year and like all these, there's all this spacing and he's going to be able to just spray the ball out wide and everything. Like we're going to roll. Right.
Yeah.
I fucking ripped off Frank Jackson's last name.
People
couldn't believe I did it.
This is the thing with Pistons fans. They are obsessed when national people talk about the team. So they get excited. And then when you say one thing that might even hint that you're not 100% on your P's and Q's when it comes to the team, they turn on you. But
unbelievable.
Guys, Sam,
that's on me.
When it comes to national people, Sam knows a lot about your basketball people, your basketball team, a lot more than a lot of other people. So give Sam some slack. Cut him some slack, people. Yeah.
It was funny. I was in. Okay, James, tell the people what you've got coming up this week in terms of writing. Tell the people where they can find you on the internet.
yeah, if you're into the Pistons, or if you're from France, or if you just like Killian Hayes like KOC, I had a story yesterday that talking to Killian's longtime trainer about the work that went into tweaking his jump shot. You can check that out on The Athletic. About 2 hours ago, I posted a Q&A with who I think will be the Pistons' breakout player this year, Isaiah Livers, who had his
Man, we need to talk about Isaiah. Oh, man, I'm so in.
Oh, okay. Your face made me think that, like, you thought I was crazy.
No, I think he's good. Like,
I thought he was going to start before. I thought he might start before they did the Bojan trade.
Yeah.
He's going to be good. He was so good in the league. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely with you.
That's my pick for the Pistons breakout player this year. I did a Q&A with him. He has not had a healthy summer since full summer since 2019, 2020 COVID, obviously. And then if you know about him, he had a foot injury and surgery at the end of Michigan and missed all of last year. So check that out. And then, later on this week, there'll be Pistons stuff throughout the week, but those two are fresh and up right now. If you want to check those out.
James is the best. Go follow him. I am in the middle of like trying to get stuff together on draft content moving forward, but next week I will certainly be writing about the Scoot Henderson, Victor Wembanyama sweepstakes,
yes,
that will be occurring in Las Vegas next week. So, until next time, keep it locked here at the Game Theory Podcast, but we'll talk soon. Bye.